Hopkins. Bryant for the win.
Interviews from your favorite local coaches and athletes.
He's getting to the basket of will, and he's hitting that three-point shot with some consistency now, and he's just in a groove right now where he's pretty well unstoppable.
Hall of Fame and legendary guests.
I was driven by loving to play, liking the challenge of being an NFL quarterback, but after 18 years, I was 1 month short of 39 years old. It's time to go.
Analysis and insight on the latest national sports topics. Live from the Auto Farm Studios, it's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
Welcome into another edition of Drive Time Sports. Live from the Auto Farm Studios, 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. I'm excited for today's show. We got a great guest joining us in studio. We're going to catch up with Jared Lesser, former Carbon High School and USU Eastern pitcher. Just wrapped up his time at BYU and has signed a contract with the New York Yankees. The Major League Baseball draft of 2020 is a unique story in itself. All last week we talked about it. From 40 rounds to 5 rounds, teams can sign unlimited undrafted free agents, but teams have really tapered on that. There are some teams that have not signed a single undrafted free agent. This was put in to save roughly $30 million in player salaries, and so teams are being very, very picky. Now, they can fill out their systems however they want. It's just a different time for Major League Baseball, which I think is even more impressive for someone like Jared, who has signed an undrafted contract with the Yankees. $20,000 signing bonus they can offer him to anyone that they would like that's an undrafted free agent. But again, there's a number of teams that haven't even looked at undrafted free agents in order to save some money. So I'm looking forward to this conversation. That'll be next segment here on Drive Time Sports. I want to talk about Jared's journey. A kid that pitched at Carbon. He pitched for both Helper and Price American Legion baseball squads. Went on to USU Eastern. It's a great story, and that'll be next segment here on Drive Time Sports. Let's take a look at what else is happening in the national sports scene. This isn't breaking news, but it's kind of one of those moments that you look at, you're like, wow, this really happened? The Tampa Bay Buccaneers unveiled the first pictures of Tom Brady in a Buccaneer uniform, and it just looks weird. I mean, you know, we've known for months now that he's going to play for Tampa Bay. But when you first see the picture, it's just weird. Look, put it in the file with the All That Ain't Right squad. Put it right next to Michael Jordan in a Wizards uniform. That's strange. It's very strange looking. Well, let's take a look at what's happening in the NBA. Now, with the start of the season coming up relatively soon, July 30th, that's what we're thinking about, right? There's still a lot of uncertainty. And today we had quite a few tidbits come out as far as what the NBA is planning. And we know that there's a list of players that aren't for sure if they want to play for whatever reason. Social issues, scared with the pandemic. I mean, there are still players that are a little bit skeptical about returning to action and being placed in a bubble in Florida. I understand all that. Well, now the NBA has put in a deadline where players must notify their team by June 24th, and the compensation would be reduced for each game missed. So now we have a deadline. So guys like Kyrie Irving, Avery Bradley, Dwight Howard, just to name a few, they have 8 days to decide if they want to play basketball or not. And again, it's just another step, another notch in Adam Silver's leadership ability. This is not Rob Manfred. This is a different type of commissioner that is trying to get things done. 8 days is plenty of time. That's a good month before the season is expected to resume in Florida. They have by June 24th to notify the team if they will or will not play. Now, with that being said, the league has also announced that any player who exercises the right to not play will not be disciplined. It's just a reduction in salary. So there's two categories of non-participating NBA players who will not have their salary reduced. Protected players and excused players. Okay? Those are the players that are believed to be higher risk for severe illness from COVID-19. June 25th is going to be the deadline for excused absences. NBA players have also been informed that anyone who leaves the Orlando campus without the league's approval will be subject to 10 to 14 days of self-quarantine, a reduction in compensation for the games missed, and enhanced testing, which I'm assuming is deep nasal swabs. So again, the NBA taking measures to prepare for what is to come at the end of July. Inside that Orlando bubble, players are going to have the option of wearing a ring that could help with early detection of the coronavirus as well. It's going to track their temperature, their respiratory, and their heart rate. The league is going full bore. It's not one of those deals where the league just says, hey, we resume. You go to that hotel, you go to that hotel, meet here. It's not like a rec league basketball game. The league is actually putting in the steps to make sure it's a safe environment for those who will be in attendance. Again, I think the NBA has done a terrific job with this. Let's move over to the world of NASCAR. This should not be a surprise. Dale Earnhardt Jr., two-time Daytona 500 winner and a two-time champion in what is now the Xfinity Series. He is now inducted into the NASCAR Hall of Fame. He's part of the 2021 class. And he's also joined by Mike Stefanik, who has 9 NASCAR championships and 74 wins in the Modified Series. And Red Farmer was also announced into the NASCAR Hall of Fame class today. Voting was conducted virtually. Remember when we had this conversation with Alex Hayden of the Motor Racing Network? There was the question on, should Dale Jr. go into the Hall of Fame? And to me, that was absolutely insane. I don't care if this man never won a NASCAR championship. When you look at his importance to the sport, he absolutely is a Hall of Famer. I don't think there's any question about it. 26 times he won the Cup Series, including 10 wins at Daytona and Talladega. Right now, he's an NBC NASCAR analyst, and he's also the owner of JR Motorsports. That's a name that's going to continue on NASCAR for a very long time moving down the line. So congratulations to Dale Earnhardt Jr. He is now in the NASCAR Hall of Fame. That's a quick look at what's happening to the national sports front. Local sports recap is coming up here in just a moment. And again, we're going to be joined by Jared Lesser. Also, we'll talk about the potential 10 worst salaries in the NBA. Klay Thompson, is that one of the worst? That's coming up when we return right here on Drive Time Sports.
Pitch to Bellinger. He swings and he hits a high fly ball right center field. This ball's gone!
Now a 3-1 for Acuna. Swinging a high fly ball! Deep to left field! Way, way back! It's gone!
Live from the Auto Farm Studios, it's Drive Time Sports on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
This will be a fun segment here on Drive Time Sports. It's not every day we get to tie the local scene into the national realm, but that's exactly what we get to do today. As you heard during that last commercial break, former Carbon High School, USU Eastern, and BYU pitcher Jared Lesser has signed a deal with the New York Yankees, and he's joining us right now in studio. Jared, first off, how does that sound? New pitcher for the New York Yankees.
Crazy. You'd have told me this a week ago, I would have laughed.
I definitely appreciate you taking out the time to join us. It's funny because we've been interviewing you since you were in high school playing quarterback at Carbon High.
Yep.
And now we're talking about you going off to the Yankees. One of the things I want to get into today is your journey, because your journey is so unique, so much different than the traditional pathway, right, to Major League Baseball. So yeah, you're a multiple sport athlete at Carbon High School. You go to Southern Utah to play football. For whatever reason, that doesn't work. You come back here. We can get into all this, but I mean, the journey in itself is so unique.
Yeah, it's been a wild ride. From where I was at 5 years ago to compare with most other guys who signed MLB contracts were 5 years ago, I mean, it's completely opposite ends of the spectrum, I think.
Yeah, well, let's start by talking about it. Southern Utah doesn't work out for football, so you come back here, and I know when speaking with you at that particular time, you didn't know if you were ever going to play sports again.
Yeah, so come back from SUU, started playing at USU Eastern baseball. Scott Madsen, luckily enough, to let me come and try out, made the roster for the fall team, and got diagnosed with autoimmune disease, rheumatoid arthritis. Didn't really even throw that much my freshman year at USU Eastern. I think it was like 16, 12 innings, something like that. Mostly at the end of the year, once I got, you know, my kind of you know, my health under control and everything. And then, you know, I was like, yeah, maybe baseball isn't going to work out. You know, I'll try to get a job here in Price and just kind of, you know, start life. Just, you know, start working and everything like that. And then didn't get a job that I was, you know, hoping for. And then went to Lake Powell for a summer job and just kind of decided, hey, you know, like, if I'm going to play baseball and I'm going to do this, like, I'm going to give it everything I got. And that's when it started to kind of change. I got rid of the rest of my big weight from football. And that's when it all just kind of started from there.
I know that while you were at USU Eastern, you had an opportunity to kind of coach yourself, to kind of look at what you were doing right or wrong. And I know you took the steps to improve you. So USU Eastern's a very big moment in your baseball career.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, hasn't been a traditionally, you know, stellar program in the SWAC and everything like that. And it was good to kind of be like an underdog in a way. And it was good to kind of just figure myself out. You know, our pitching coach was a previous player from the year before. Like I said, really the only pitching coach I've had is my guy at BYU. And so really it was an opportunity. I started going up north, working out, getting some information from trainers and coaches up there. I'd come down and kind of just do stuff on my own. I was watching, you know, videos of guys who threw, you know, pros, mechanics stuff, pitches, everything like that. And really just, it was an opportunity to just kind of really make myself better and really kind of just figure out what's going to be best for me moving forward.
At what point in time during your career at USU Eastern did you think, okay, I can take this to the next level? Maybe not to the majors, but I can get this to the next level, play D2, play D1 baseball.
It was actually the end of my freshman year, which is crazy because I didn't think I'd play again. But we were down in our conference tournament in Nevada, and I hit like 92 that day. Came in relief. I couldn't remember who we were playing. And I came in relief and I hit 92. I was like, oh, like, okay. I didn't think I could throw that hard. You know, I was like 87, 88, like all year, even lower than that, you know, in the fall and stuff. And I was like, man, like, okay, like this could turn into something. And then after, you know, working, you know, in Lake Powell and getting myself into shape. And after that, it was, I came back in the fall and, you know, it was like from day one, I was up to like 90. My stuff was looking really good. Like all of our scrimmages at USU Eastern, you know, I was just dominating our hitters. And then, actually went to a showcase in Arizona is where I got noticed by all the colleges and everything. So
why BYU? After USU Eastern, what was it that made you say BYU is going to be best for me?
So BYU was actually the first team that contacted me right after the showcase. We played on like a Saturday night in Arizona, drove back Sunday, and then I got a call. Actually, it was like Sunday afternoon from Trent Pratt, the assistant coach there, and he just said, hey, like, I watched you throw last night. I really like what we've seen. We want to try to get you up on here in a visit. And so they were really the ones that first reached out to me, which I thought was awesome. You know, it was kind of shocking. You know, this big D1 program. You know, BYU had been dominating in years past. You know, the conference championships. You know, they beat Utah, you know, mostly every year. You know, they've been beating UVU every year. And I was like, you know, like, pretty much the best program in Utah over the past several years is contacting me. So, I mean, the winning side of it for sure, you know, in Utah and playing in the West Coast Conference. You know, I talked to Utah, too. Colorado Mesa was probably the other biggest school that I talked to. And really, they also gave me my best offer as far as scholarship and everything like that. And they gave me the best opportunity to be a starter, to be, you know, basically whatever role I want. You know, they said, hey, we really like what we see. You know, you come in and you work hard, like, you know, basically, you know, the limit's going to be up to you, you know, however much you want to come in and do. And basically like that, you know, they said, if you come in and want to be a starter, like, you're going to earn that spot and, you know, we'll give it to you. And really, I just felt really wanted and kind of accepted. And then to get an education from Brigham Young University is, you know, a big deal. And, you know, for me to get a scholarship to get a free education there was big time too for my degree.
Again, Jared Lesser, our guest right now as we talk about his baseball career, which has now led to a contract with the New York Yankees organization. Jared, let's talk about your time at BYU. Your junior year, we're following you down here, and you're starting to make a couple of appearances. But mm-hmm. It seems like the season's getting better and better for you, right?
Oh, yeah.
And the attention's starting to mound, you know, build around what you're able to accomplish. And then talking to you, you had a good junior year, but you didn't feel like you had the best junior year that you could have had.
No, I don't. You know, I felt like, you know, I was a starter early. Kind of lost my starting job after a couple of bad outings. I felt like stuff was really starting to click towards the end of the season. Started really, you know, coming out of the pen and was throwing really good. And I just felt like I just had more in the tank. Like, I don't know how to really explain it. You know, I just felt like, you know, it was a good season. We had just won the conference championship. Everything didn't end the way, it happened. We went to our conference tournament. I mean, we dropped the first two games and we're out, you know, and then we tried to get the at-large bid for the tournament, and we didn't, obviously. So really, I was just, man, I was like, dang, you know, like, I wish I could have done more, you know, and that's always kind of been my attitude. Like, I've always been like, you know, I never really feel happy with a performance, you know what I mean? Like, even if I throw a no-hitter, you know, there's probably a time where I'm like, man, I shouldn't have walked that guy, you know what I mean? Or, oh, I got lucky on one, you know, I left a hanging curveball or something like that. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, it was a good year. It looks okay on paper, but me mentally and my approach going into my senior year was, you can do better for sure.
So you have that attitude going into your senior year. You have some stellar outings, mm-hmm. but we have the most bizarre 2020.
Exactly.
I mean, this is just completely nuts the way everything has gone down. And it does trickle into Major League Baseball, and we'll get to that in just a moment. But to have that mindset going into your senior year, and then to have things end the way they did, yeah. What's that like for a student athlete?
I mean, it sucked. You know, we didn't have a good start to a season, but I feel like we were starting to kind of come together as a team. And then it was just over all of a sudden, out of nowhere. You know, we were talking earlier, I was golfing with our grad assistant coach, our catcher from the year before, and I was looking at, you know, all the social media, and it was like the Big 12 just canceled their season, March Madness, the basketball tournament's canceled, and, you know, I was actually starting to tear up already because I was like, yeah, our season's going to get canceled, you know. And we get to the field, you know, everybody's kind of excited because they actually canceled the season, which kind of sucked. A lot of the younger guys were like, yeah, you know, no class, you know, woohoo, we get summer and everything, and then I'm thinking of, man, did I really just throw my last game last weekend in Oklahoma State? Like, that's the last time I'm going to get to pitch, you know, because how am I supposed to go and play pro ball if I don't play my senior year, you know? And this was all before, you know, the NCAA gave us our year back and everything. But our coaches basically pulled us in and said, hey, man, like, we're really sorry for you seniors. We don't really know what's going on right now, but you guys all need to clean out your lockers and head home. And so I just started crying, man. It was like, you know, something was just taken away from you that, you know, you love so much and you care so much, you put so much time and effort and you know, it's something you love, you know, unconditionally, and it's just somebody just like basically takes it away from you. In this case, it was a sickness, you know, and everything like that, but it sucked, and it was just shocking. So
going into your senior campaign, you I don't know if you knew that there was a possibility that, hey, I could end up getting drafted or not, but is that in your mind, or is it more just team-based? Because baseball is such a unique sport, and you can only control what you can control. I've watched guys throw no-hitters and lose, right?
Yeah.
You can only control what you can control. So what's your mindset going into your final year? Is it more, let's try to get drafted, let's try to win baseball games, a combination? What's that like?
It was definitely, obviously, a combination. I mean, I'm very competitive. I want to win. That's why, you know, I'm like, hey, I can always do better. You know what I mean? My attitude was going in was definitely, you know, I want to go and play pro ball. I talked to one team at the end of my junior year, the Angels. They texted me a little bit last year in the draft, but then it was just kind of shut down. So obviously I was, you know, wanting to perform well for my team in order for us to, you know, put my team in the best situation to win games, you know, starting games off as best as I can, pitching the best of my ability to for us to win games, and also to, I mean, obviously, you know, get some scouts' attention, get some people to start looking at me, you know, so I can sign as a senior for sure, get drafted.
I'm sure draft night's probably a little chaotic and nerve-wracking. Only five yeah. rounds this year, which probably adds to the anxiety a little bit.
Exactly.
But it did all work out. I mean, draft night, are you staying close to the phone, looking, and hoping you're going to get that call?
Yeah, draft night I was a little bit. Mostly every team that I talked to this year, because of it being five rounds, they were like, hey, you know, we're mostly looking at you as a free agent. Actually, the Yankees were the only ones who told me, you know, draft isn't totally off the table, but they had lost two of their five picks. So really, they only had three picks this year. So I was looking at my phone a little bit. Really, the big day for me when it was staring at my phone was this past Sunday. They could start calling teams could start contacting players at 9 a.m. Eastern. So it was 7 a.m. our time. So I was up at 6:30 just staring at my phone. Went to bed at like 3 a.m. that night. I couldn't sleep. Woke up at 6:30 and just was staring at my phone all day. So that was my nerve-wracking kind of draft day, but it was more of like free agent day.
But then it became easy when the Yankees got a hold of you, right?
Yeah, oh, definitely. I mean, I actually just eating breakfast, I sat down. I was like, you know, I need to do something to get my mind off of all this. And I actually just started playing some Xbox. You know, I had to do something to get my mind off it. And looked down and saw that the scout from the Yankees was calling me, the guy who I had talked to up to this point. And he called me. He was like, hey, man, how do you feel about being a Yankee? And just, you know, from there. It was crazy. I mean, to see his number and name actually pop up on my phone, you know, when I was expecting it, and on, you know, it was like 4 or 5 hours into free agency, it was like, you know, it didn't seem real, for sure.
Yeah, you know, when you look across the major sports in this country, you have iconic franchises that are a brand. I mean, yeah. In baseball, we're talking about the Yankees, the Dodgers, the Red Sox. There's a handful of them. In the NBA, there's a handful of them. Yeah. The Lakers, the Celtics, it goes across the board.
Of course.
For you to say you are now a member of one of those franchise brands that is global, what's that feeling like?
Oh, it's crazy, man. I mean, everywhere. I mean, you know, you hear baseball. I mean, the first thing that comes to people's heads is, you know, like Yankees, Babe Ruth.
Absolutely.
You know, Derek Jeter. You know, and it just goes along with, I mean, celebrities. You see everybody wearing the Yankees hats and everything. So it's crazy, you know, enough that, you know, I actually got to sign a free agent contract and, you know, I get to chase my dreams of playing professional baseball. But for it to be the most winningest baseball team in history, you know, the 27-time World Series winning New York Yankees, it's mind-blowing. I mean, for me to even, you know, for them to even know about me and to call some kid from Price, Utah, you know, it's just the, you know, New York, and then to Price, you know, Price, Utah to New York, it's crazy. Yeah.
So what are you most looking forward to now? Because I know the Major League Baseball season, we don't know what it's going to look like. In fact, we have no idea if we're even going to get a season in 2020. So what are you most looking forward to, and what's kind of the time frame that they have put you on?
So after I got drafted, you know, and everything was said and done, you know, they told me they want to get me down to Tampa Bay, which is where all their facilities are at, the spring training and everything. So they said they wanted to get me down there in the next couple weeks, you know, just as stuff starts to kind of open back up and kind of they're starting to figure out, you know, what to do with the season. So I think, you know, the plan is to have us try to all get down there here in the next few weeks, start working out, starting to get ready. So when they do come to the agreement with, you know, minor league season, major league season, everything like that, you know, everybody's ready to go and they can just kind of send us off from there. I actually haven't talked to them since I got my free agent signing. I know they're busy, but they're supposed to call me all throughout this week and next week with details and everything. So,
well, Jared, it's been a tremendous honor to watch you since you were in high school. Now you're a member of the New York Yankees. I definitely appreciate you taking out the time to stop by the studio because I know you're very busy. But hopefully we'll catch up again real soon and we can talk again once things get off and rolling.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me.
Very fun conversation. Again, that's Jared Lesser, former BYU, USU Eastern, and Carbon High School pitcher, now on his way to a major league contract with the New York Yankees. We've got a break for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up when we return live from the Auto Farm Studios right here on 107.3 FM and 750 AM. Sometimes you want to go where everybody knows your
name. Salud.
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 It's time for Cheers, brought to you by the Handymart Inn Helper. You have to go check out their fantastic beer cave, especially during the summer months. The Handymart Inn Helper bringing you the Cheers segment, where every Tuesday we raise our glasses to something happening in sports that is worth recognizing. And today it takes us to the NFL. I think we would all agree, the Pro Bowl is without doubt the worst all-star game of the four major sports in this country. There's no question, right? I mean, it's hard. It's almost unwatchable. But today, the NFL made it a tad bit more exciting by announcing that the 2021 Pro Bowl, which takes place on January 31st, will go down in Las Vegas at Allegiant Stadium. Now, here's why this is so significant. The game stinks. I can't stress that enough. It's not fun. It's boring. But I understand why it's boring. I understand why the game is borderline unwatchable, and it has to do with a couple of different reasons. For one, it takes place now the week before the Super Bowl. We've just watched the best football of the year in the NFC and AFC championship games. It doesn't feature anyone on the Super Bowl rosters, and there is a calculated risk for players to go out and play football at any particular time, be it the preseason, the Pro Bowl, a meaningless Week 17 game, there's a calculated risk. So I understand that. But by bringing an end to the Pro Bowl's brief run in Orlando, which is a terrific place to visit, but it's not an entertainment capital by any stretch of the imagination, Vegas is, I believe the intrigue around the Pro Bowl amps up drastically. And I'm going to take a personal experience at the NBA All-Star Jam in Salt Lake. If you're old enough to remember when the NBA All-Star Game came to Salt Lake and the festivities that surrounded it, it was fun. It was a blast. It was well put together. And I can't wait for the All-Star Game to come back to Utah. The game itself has always been better than the Pro Bowl. The NBA All-Star Game, it's always been better than the Pro Bowl. But the festivities, when handled correctly by a certain city, amplify the experience. And with this game being in Vegas, if you're a football fan, I don't know that the game is a destination, but the festivities throughout the week leading up to the Super Bowl in Vegas, that's appealing. I mean, for the moment, we can forget about the fact that the NFL is trying to highlight a new market by bringing the Pro Bowl to Vegas, trying to highlight a new stadium. Forget about all that. The Pro Bowl has to be fan-driven. It has to be. And by putting the Pro Bowl on the Strip in Las Vegas, it becomes the main attraction in a city that knows how to sell an event. It now becomes a destination for football fans. It's a week-long event. It's a celebration of football. It's before the Super Bowl, and you're going to a city that is a tourist destination, pending everything with COVID-19, I understand. But nonetheless, this is a fantastic idea for the NFL. And I know the draft is going to Vegas in 2022. And now that they're adding a Pro Bowl a year earlier, I mean, it really is just, it's a nod to Vegas, who decided to build a stadium for the Raiders, one of the largest brands in America when we talk about professional sports, who never had their own stadium for whatever reason. Vegas runs that risk. They build a stadium, and now the NFL is giving them the ability to capitalize off of it. So Vegas is going to be the 11th host of the Pro Bowl since 1950. It was in L.A., and again, I'm an L.A. guy. I know that SoFi Stadium is going to be the greatest professional sports stadium in the world when it's completed. Still can't put the Pro Bowl in L.A. You can't do it. It doesn't make sense. Makes sense in Vegas. Hard Rock Stadium in Miami, again, great, great place. I love going to Miami. Who doesn't? It's not a fit for the Pro Bowl. This is good. I'll tell you, I may have to check this out. I don't even care if I go to the game. The game's kind of the game to me now feels like the Hall of Fame game in the preseason. Nobody goes to Hall of Fame week in Canton to go to a preseason game. Nobody cares about that. You go for the festivities. You go to see the Hall of Fame inductions. You go to see a celebration of the game and to potentially rub elbows with some of the greats that we have ever seen. That's why you go to the Hall of Fame game. It ends with the Hall of Fame game, a preseason game that means nothing, right? And that's what we see on TV, but it's the festivities that bring people in, and that's why it's a destination for football fans. The Pro Bowl is going to be the exact same if the NFL can market it correctly and get it off the ground and rolling in Las Vegas. I think it's terrific. So cheers to the NFL. Cheers to Las Vegas. Cheers to the Raiders. Cheers to Allegiant Stadium. I hope this breathes life into the worst All-Star game that we have in professional sports, the Pro Bowl, going to Vegas January 31st, 2021. That's Cheers, brought to you by the Handy Mart in Helper. We're going to break for just a moment. When we return, we'll move over to the NBA. John Hollinger recently wrote an article for The Athletic. It's a very interesting article, to say the least. Klay Thompson, coming off of an ACL injury, does he have the worst deal in the NBA, the worst contract in the NBA? with the concerns of his age and the way he plays coming off an ACL tear? We'll talk about that. I'll throw a couple of other candidates out there as well when we return right here on Drive Time Sports, live from the Auto Farm Studios.
This is John Wall from the Washington Wizards, and you're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buskerings on KOAL 750 AM.
Wall shoots over Bayless. Dagger! John Wall with a career-high 47 points.
Final segment on this Tuesday edition of Drive Time Sports, live from the Auto Farm Studios. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini, and I'm going to bring in Travis Anderson to help close out this edition of the show, and we'll talk worst contract in the NBA. Now, I haven't read the article yet, but it was recently discussed by John Hollinger of The Athletic. John Hollinger, terrific basketball mind when it really comes down to it. Spent some time as an executive in the league as well. Just mentioned the idea that perhaps Klay Thompson has the worst contract in the NBA since he is fresh off an ACL injury after signing a $190 million extension with the Golden State Warriors. When you hear this even remotely mentioned, what's your initial thoughts on Klay Thompson and the idea that this contract is a liability?
He has a point, because we don't know how Klay's going to react coming off that injury. You got a lot of money invested in Klay, Steph, and Draymond Green. So for the Warriors, it's a high risk giving all that money to a guy. You don't know if he's going to come back and be that same guy that you paid all that money, you know, to be that guy.
No, here's the reason why I think it's a fair conversation to have with Klay Thompson. He's not going to forget how to shoot. He's going to be just fine as far as scoring the basketball. But one of the things I love so much about Klay Thompson's game, and one of the reasons he was such a terrific fit with the Warriors, he can get it done on the defensive end of the ball.
Yeah, he's right up there with Draymond as one of their best defensive players.
He's a lockdown, lockdown on the perimeter, absolutely, no question. He just made about $33 million to rehab this past offseason. You got to consider that, okay? Now, when you take a look at the way this contract progresses, the final year of the deal, he'll be 34 years old, and he's going to make $43 million in that final year.
It's a lot of coin for a guy.
That's a lot of money. Okay, but here's the reason why I don't think that Klay Thompson has the worst contract in the NBA, because as we sit here right now, the most untradeable contract, without a doubt, is John Wall with the Washington Wizards.
The $200 million?
There's no question. And John Wall is not going to terminate that contract early. The Wizards are stuck with that deal, and you are not going to be able to trade it. So in my mind, right off the top of my head, I'm going to say that John Wall has a worse contract, also because he's dealing with an Achilles injury. And in today's world, with the medical advances, we have seen that ACL injuries don't necessarily pack the same doom and gloom that they once did 10 to 15 years ago. We can't say that with an Achilles injury.
No,
we can't. Okay? And so if we're going to talk about John Wall, and we're going to talk about Klay Thompson, you have to mention Kevin Durant.
Of course.
You have to. Right? We didn't see KD at all this past offseason. Max contract for KD.
We haven't seen him in a year.
We haven't seen him in a year. He's 31 years old. Just made $38.2 million. Next year, he's going to make $40 million. $42 million the year after, $44 the year after that. That's $164 million over 4 years. And here's what makes this contract even worse, in my mind. And it could pay dividends. Look, we could look back on this segment at the end of next season and say, well, that was a stupid conversation to have. But the Warriors understand Klay Thompson's body in a way that the Brooklyn Nets do not with Kevin Durant. They've seen Klay Thompson. They got to look at that injury before they gave him that contract.
Yeah, Brooklyn doesn't.
It's not the same conversation with the Brooklyn Nets. Okay, and so when you give someone 40% of a team's salary cap and you have no history whatsoever with this player, I worry about that a little bit.
For you know, the Nets, who, you know, they're going to be aggressive whenever the offseason comes around, you know, they're trying to pair a third guy, so there's a lot of money invested in Kyrie and Durant, and I just don't know if we're going to get that same explosive Kevin Durant that we once had just because of the Achilles injury. You lose a step with that injury.
There's no doubt. And again, for Klay Thompson, if you're going to have this conversation, I can point to several athletes that have recovered just fine from ACL injuries. Sure, there's a list that haven't, but when you look at the high-profiled NBA basketball players who attempted to recover from an Achilles injury, I mean, just look at them. For one, Kobe Bryant, I don't care what age Kobe was at, he was playing at an extremely high level when he tore his Achilles. You could have made the argument at that particular time.
Played all every minute until he tore that. And I think the prior game, they were on a back-to-back. Didn't he play all 48 against Portland, and then the next night against Golden State was 46 minutes
in? He was playing incredible basketball. Yeah. Never even remotely got back to that level after tearing his Achilles. Elton Brand, same conversation.
Never the same.
He was never the same. Chauncey Billups, never the same. DeMarcus Cousins, who is still in the league right now, he has had multiple serious injuries since tearing that Achilles. And at one time, DeMarcus Cousins was the hottest name for a big on the market. And coming off of that Achilles injury, things have just continued to go down for DeMarcus Cousins. He doesn't even have a team right now. He had to sign a near-vet minimum deal with the Lakers this last offseason. He had to sign a minimum deal with the Warriors the season before, right? So when you look at the direct and immediate future of an Achilles injury based off an ACL in the NBA today, I'm going to take my chances with an ACL injury throughout.
Yeah, the Achilles, just everything comes with it. It just looks like injury after injury, and you've seen it with Cousins, like you said, with the Achilles and the knees and all that. Those are just serious injuries that you just lose steps.
Now, again, I don't believe that Kevin Durant, at the moment, has the worst contract in the NBA. I don't believe that.
Mm-mm.
I do not believe that Klay Thompson has the worst contract in the NBA at the moment. I still believe that's John Wall, hands down, and nobody can touch it.
It's bad.
Because we still don't know how these guys are going to respond. Again, I like the idea of an ACL a lot more than an Achilles, but I'm going to throw something else out there to you as well, and maybe this is where Brooklyn inherits that risk. So they get Kyrie, but Kyrie can't seem to stay healthy either, right?
Never has.
So you have a large percentage of your salary wrapped up with Kyrie and Kevin Durant. But the 2019 NBA Finals, it was the first time since 1990 that the NBA Finals did not feature Michael Jordan, Hakeem Olajuwon, Shaq, Duncan, Kobe, or LeBron. That's 30 years. Think about that. 30 years without those players that I just mentioned. Okay?
That's bizarre.
Well, the reason why I bring that up is because you need an elite player to get or win an NBA championship. And Kevin Durant was an elite player.
Yeah, he was.
Before the injury, right? So that's why I can't say that he nor Klay have the worst contract in the league. We'll see next season. But for me, hands down right now, it's John Wall.
It's John Wall for me, too. And, you know, those other guys, we'll have to see what happens when they come back. But right now, you know, John Wall, that $200 million contract, it's a bad contract that the Wizards gave out.
It does not look good, that is for sure. We are just about out of time on this edition of Drive Time Sports. I want to thank Jared Lesser for taking out the time to join us in the studio for a lengthy conversation. Congratulations to him once again. A full write-up of his journey is available right now at CastleCountryRadio.com. And, of course, we'll be rooting for Jared as he continues his baseball career. Now with the New York Yankees. On the show tomorrow, we're going to continue to talk Major League Baseball. Is it doom and gloom? Yes, I think it is as far as the season is concerned. Maybe still a glimmer of hope that we could get something. I think baseball realizes there's too much to lose to not have a season. We'll talk about that on the show tomorrow as well. And we're also going to start talking fantasy football, and we'll trickle in a little boxing this week on top of that. So a couple of great segments still to come up this week here on Drive Time Sports. He's Travis Anderson. I'm Jordan Buscarini. We will catch you tomorrow. Until then, be safe. We are out.